Right, well, we ended the first part of our study with Christ as did David, reigning firstly over Judah only. We now have to look at the process whereby the Son of Man will take the stick of Joseph and the tribes of Israel, his fellows, and put them with him, even with the stick of Judah, and make them one stick, quoting from Ezekiel 37. We come now to the second exodus of Israel, as it's sometimes termed, when the Son of Man sends out his angels, in the words of Matthew 24, to the four corners to gather the elect nation. We believe that this will be an event that will absolutely stun the world. And the events of the exodus from Egypt will pale in comparison. And we know that this will be a time of judgment against the nations, the time when the kings of the earth will rebel against Christ in the manner described in Psalm 2 and in Revelation 19. But turn to Jeremiah chapter 23 and verse 5. Behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that I will raise unto David a righteous branch, and a king shall reign and prosper, and shall execute judgment and justice in the earth. We don't need any comment as to what that is referring to. In his days, Judah shall be saved, and Israel shall dwell safely. This is the name whereby he shall be called, Yahweh, our righteousness. Now, verse 6 is a global statement of God's intent with the people. Judah is to be saved, and Israel is to dwell safely. Verse 7, therefore, behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that they shall no more say, Yahweh liveth, which brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt, but Yahweh liveth, that brought up and which led the seed, notice, of the house of Israel. Now, not the house of Judah, the seed of the house of Israel, out of the north country and from all countries whither I had driven them, and they shall dwell in their own land. Now, this is telling us that an exodus of the seed of the house of Israel is to occur, which is to completely eclipse the earlier exodus when God brought them out of Egypt under the hand of Moses. And indeed, at that time, men in the nations of the world could look and could see indeed that the God of Israel existed. God indeed glorified his name by bringing the children of Israel out of Egypt. It was a wonderful testimony to the existence of Yahweh, Israel's God. Similarly, when the seed of the house of Israel are brought forth out of the north country and from all countries whither God had driven them and dwell in their own land, this is to be a very great sign, so people no more say, Yahweh liveth that brought the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt, but Yahweh liveth that brought up and which led the seed of the house of Israel out of the north country. This is to be the manner in which Yahweh is to make himself known to the Gentiles, which Gentile nations which are in darkness. And if we turn to Jeremiah chapter 16, we'll see some very similar words. Jeremiah chapter 16 and verse 14. Therefore, behold, the days come, saith Yahweh, that it shall no more be said, Yahweh liveth, that brought up the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt, but Yahweh liveth, that brought up the children of Israel from the land of the north, from all lands whither he had driven them, and I will bring them again into their land that I gave unto their fathers. So again, this is talking here about the second phase of Israel's restoration, the restoration of the house of Israel from the north. But here some details are given as to how this restoration is to be brought about. Verse 16, behold, I will send for many fishers, saith Yahweh, and they shall fish them. Afterward will I send for many hunters, and they shall hunt them from every mountain, from every hill, and out of the holes of the rocks. For mine eyes, verse 17, are upon all their ways, they are not hid from my face, neither is their iniquity hid from mine eyes. And so, certain individuals, here termed fishers and hunters, are to be sent out to fish and hunt the children of Israel out of the land of the north and out of the countries where they have been driven, and the result of the work of the fishers and hunters is to bring back this ancient people to their land. Well, who are the fishers and hunters? As we've already commented in Matthew chapter 24, Jesus there speaks of his angels or messengers being sent to gather the elect nation from the four winds. Who are these messengers whose work it is to gather the elect? Who are the fishers and hunters? Well, if we turn back to Isaiah chapter 66, we find the answer, I believe, to this question. Isaiah 66. Now, this is a chapter which deals with the consolation God will bring to Jerusalem. Verses 10 to 14 speak of the divine favour returning to Jerusalem. Verse 10, rejoice ye with Jerusalem, be glad with her, all ye that love her, rejoice for joy with her, all ye that mourn for her, that ye may suck and be satisfied with the breasts of her consolations, that ye may milk out and be delighted with the abundance of her glory. For thus saith Yahweh, behold, I will extend peace to her like a river, and the glory of the Gentiles like a flowing stream. The divine consolation, return and favour, returning to Jerusalem. Verses 15 to 18, however, speak of the terrible retribution that will fall upon Jerusalem's enemies, upon these Gentile nations that invade the land at the time of the end, and God destroys them. Verse 15, for behold, Yahweh will come with fire and with his chariots like a whirlwind to render his anger with fury and rebuke with flames of fire. For by fire and by his sword will Yahweh plead with all flesh, and the slain of Yahweh shall be many. And then in verse 19, and this is the section that we're interested in, it says, and I will set a sign among them, and I will send those that escape of them. Well, who are those that escape of them? Well, we think here that the context indicates that these that escape are the same one third that are brought through the fire mentioned in Zechariah chapter 13, the one third that survive in the land of the house of Judah. These are the ones that escape from this great judgment of Gentile nations which God brings into the land and then destroys through Christ and the saints. These are those that escape, this one third of the house of Judah. I will send those that escape of them unto the nations, to Tarshish, Pul, and Lud, that draw the bow, to Tubal and Javan, to the isles afar off, that have not seen my fame, neither have seen my glory. Well, these emissaries that are sent out from those that escape have two things to do. Notice, the end of verse 19, they shall declare my glory among the Gentiles. That's the first thing. And secondly, verse 20, and they shall bring all your brethren for an offering unto Yahweh out of all nations, upon horses and in chariots and in litters and upon mules and upon swift beasts, to my holy mountain Jerusalem, saith Yahweh, as the children of Israel bring an offering in a clean vessel unto the house of Yahweh. And so these that escape are sent to the nations to do two things: to declare God's glory among the Gentiles, and secondly, to bring their brethren back to Jerusalem. Those that escape, then, we believe, are the third part of Judah that is brought through the fire, the survivors of the great judgment upon Israel, upon Judah, when Gog comes into the land. We believe that these are the messengers, the angels, the fishers and hunters that assemble the outcasts of Israel. And in Jeremiah in chapter 3, indicates that a proclamation will be made. Jeremiah chapter 3 and verse 11. Yahweh said unto me, The backsliding Israel hath justified herself more than treacherous Judah. Verse 12, go and proclaim these words towards the north, and say, return, thou backsliding Israel, saith Yahweh, and I will not cause mine anger to fall upon you, for I am merciful, saith Yahweh, and I will not keep anger forever, only acknowledge thine iniquity, that thou hast transgressed against Yahweh thy God, and hast scattered thy ways to the strangers under every green tree. Now notice that this is a proclamation to backsliding Israel toward the north. Now, I don't believe that this proclamation was actually made in the days of Jeremiah. It's clearly prophetic of a proclamation that would be made at the time of Israel's restoration. And it is a proclamation made towards the north to backsliding Israel. And if we look back at the previous few verses, we see here that backsliding Israel is in contrast to her treacherous sister Judah. Verse 7, I said after she had done all these things, turn thou unto me, but she returned not. And her treacherous sister Judah saw it, and I saw, and for all the causes whereby backsliding Israel committed adultery, I had put her away and given her a bill of divorce, yet her treacherous sister Judah. So we see the contrast here between the treacherous sister Judah and backsliding Israel. This is not a proclamation to treacherous Judah, but to backsliding Israel. In verse 12, to the 10 tribes which still remain in the lands of their dispersion at the time when Christ appears to Israel and when Judah, people in the land, repent. So there is a proclamation to be made. Verse 12, verse 14, turn, O backsliding children, saith Yahweh, for I am married unto you. I will take you, one of a city, and two of a family, and will bring you to Zion. And I will give you pastors according to mine heart, which will feed you with knowledge and with understanding. And so, one of a city and two of a family are to be brought to Zion. Now, we might wonder why one of a city and only two of a family will be brought to Zion. Well, let's just sort of leave a question mark hanging over that for the time being. Why only two of a family? Would not God bring the whole of a family back to Zion? Why only two of a family? But it does indicate that the eventual outcome of those who are brought, the eventual outcome of this regathering is that not all of them will actually be brought back to Zion, but only some of them. Well, we'll leave a question mark hanging over that, and hopefully we'll rationalise that problem a bit later on. Now, undoubtedly, the saints will be at work involved in this proclamation. They will be at work supervising the fishers and hunters, who we believe are mortal Israelites from the house of Judah. They will be undoubtedly at work supervising the gathering out of Israel and making this proclamation. But we remember that that those of Judah who are sent to the nations have firstly to declare God's glory among the nations, and secondly to bring their brethren back to Jerusalem, and a proclamation is to be made to backsliding Israel. Now it's very interesting to notice that both of these aspects of the work of the Jews, these emissaries that are sent out from Judah to the nations of the world, both of these aspects can be seen in proclamations made in the Apocalypse. In Revelation 14, there is there the wonderful picture of the 144,000 on Mount Zion with the Lamb. Having seen the vision of the 144,000 on Mount Zion with the Lamb, John sees another symbolic angel in verse 6. I saw another angel fly in the midst of heaven, having, Revised Version, an eternal gospel, an aeonian gospel, as I believe it can be more literally rendered. This is the gospel of the aeon being the age of the kingdom. This is a proclamation concerning the imminent establishment of God's kingdom over the nations of the world, to preach or proclaim unto them that dwell on the earth, to every nation and kindred and tongue and people, saying with a loud voice, fear God, give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment is come, and worship him that made heaven and earth and the sea and the fountains of waters. So before God's judgments fall in earnest upon the nations of the world, subsequent to the Lamb and the 144,000, the symbolic number of the saints, subsequent to the Lamb and the saints standing on Mount Zion, there will be a proclamation made to the nations telling them to fear God and give glory to Him. And this, we suggest, is equivalent to declaring God's glory among the Gentiles in Isaiah chapter 66 and verse 19. It is the work of these that escape from the invasion of Gentiles into the land to declare God's glory among the Gentiles. And here there is a symbolic angel. It's only in the symbol, it's only one angel, but nevertheless this angel is symbolic of a group of people who are sent to the nations to tell them to fear God and give glory to Him. It's equivalent to declaring God's glory among the Gentiles and commanding them to acknowledge that glory by giving glory to His name. Now, this is followed in Revelation 14 by another angel proclaiming that Babylon is fallen. Another, verse 8, followed another angel saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she made all nations to drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Now, the fall of Babylon is amplified in more detail in chapter 18 of the Apocalypse. And this chapter elaborates in much greater detail upon the fall of Babylon. And in verse 2 of Revelation 18, the fall of Babylon is proclaimed. And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the Great is fallen, has become the habitation of devils and the hold of every foul spirit and the cage of every unclean and hateful bird. And then in verse 4, I heard another voice from heaven saying, Come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not her plagues. Now, I believe that this is not a proclamation made to saints in Christ being called out prior to the visiting of Babylon's sins upon earth, because I think that the calling out of the saints will be quite some while before the destruction of Babylon. It simply doesn't fit, and I believe that the traditional exposition of this verse 4, it is correct that this is not a call to the saints to come out of Babylon, but it is a call to the Jews. I believe this is the same proclamation that's made to the land of the north in Jeremiah chapter 3. It's the work of the fishers inviting God's people from the 10 tribes of Israel to come out before God's judgments upon Babylon and upon Europe, these very grievous judgments that will come about before those judgments fall upon Babylon and upon Europe. And so we have here, I believe, the other aspect of the work of those that escape in Isaiah chapter 66, calling out of Babylon the exiles of the 10 tribes of Israel. The proclamation of Jeremiah chapter 3, Return thou backsliding Israel, saith Yahweh, and I will take you one of a city and two of a family, and will bring you to Zion. Let's turn back now to Jeremiah chapter 16. And verse 16, the verse about the fishers and hunters. Now this is a very interesting verse, verse 16 of Jeremiah 16, Behold, I will send for many fishers, saith Yahweh, and they shall fish them, and after, notice, I will send for many hunters, and they shall hunt them. So firstly, fishers are sent out, and then after that, there's a chronological relationship here. After this, God will send for many hunters, and they shall hunt them. Now, the idea of fishing, I believe, suggests the idea of invitation. As the disciples were made fishers of men, their duty was to invite men and women to the things of the gospel. And so Israel initially will be called out by invitation. Come out of her, my people. They'll be fished out. They'll be invited out to join their brethren with a view to escaping the judgments that about to fall on the world, about to fall from Babylon, symbolic Babylon, and with the prospect of a return to Zion. But verse 16 continues, "And after I will send for many hunters, and they shall hunt them from every mountain, from every hill, and out of the holes of the rocks, for mine eyes are upon all their ways. They are not hid from my face, neither is their iniquity hid from mine eyes." Now this idea of hunting now is somewhat different to fishing. It clearly implies an element of compulsion. Many perhaps will come willingly. "Thy people shall be willing in the day of thy power." Many of the Jews of the 10 tribes in Europe and elsewhere will come quite willingly, having heard from their brethren that have escaped, how that the one who has delivered their brethren from the land, their brethren in the land from the northern invader, many will be willing to return to Zion. But it's also clear, I think, there will be some in the 10 tribes in dispersion who will not wish to leave their countries. And we know, of course, that many of the Jews today are living in America and other places, and in Europe also, in the lap of luxury, and having some idea of God's discipline that will come upon the house of Israel, and knowing that God is still displeased with the house of Israel nationally, and that their iniquity is not hid from his eyes, they will wish to stay behind in the countries of their dispersion, and they will hide, hoping to escape detection. They hide here in the symbol of verse 16, in the mountains, the hills, and the holes of the rocks, which are the places traditionally where men flee when they're trying to escape from their enemies. So some will not wish to be fished out and hunted. They will hide, hoping to escape detection. But the all-seeing eyes of the saints directing the hunters will ensure that they are all hunted out. And so the whole people will be regathered and assembled. And we must remember that unlike their brethren of Judah, who have been refined and brought through the fire in the land, the 10 tribes, in contrast, are still a wicked people in need of divine discipline, and they're still at this stage unrelated to God through the covenant, but still, however, touching the election beloved for the Father's sake, quoting from Romans 11. We might add this to the words of Ezekiel when he said, "I do not this for your sakes, O house of Israel, but for mine holy name's sake, which ye have profaned among the heathen, whither ye went." There's nothing about the 10 tribes of Israel, there's no merit which they have in themselves, which should particularly make God wish to regather them. But there are two reasons why he will, in fulfilment of the prophecies made to the fathers, as touching the election there, beloved of the Father's sake, and also for his holy name's sake, which they profaned among the heathen whither they went, in order to glorify his holy name. And when God earlier brought the people out of Egypt, he did not show mercy to them because of any particular merit of that nation. We're told that Yahweh did not set his love upon you, nor choose you, because you were more in number than any people, for you were the fewest of all people. But it was because he would keep the oath which he had sworn unto your fathers. And so also, it will be in the second Exodus, the covenant love of God will be shown to them, to this unregenerate nation, the 10 tribes of Israel, on account of the oath sworn to their fathers. If we turn to Ezekiel chapter 20, we find that that is a chapter which deals with the abominations of Israel. And it reaches a climax which is very much connected with our subject this evening. Ezekiel chapter 20. We'll just look generally at the chapter before we home in on verses 33 onwards, which are the very interesting, significant verses. But this is a chapter that deals with the abominations of Israel. In verse 5, verse 3, "Son of man, speak unto the elders of Israel, and say unto them, Thus saith the Lord Yahweh, are ye come to inquire of me? As I live, saith the Lord Yahweh, I will not be inquired of by you. Wilt thou judge them, son of man? Wilt thou cleanse them? Cause them to know the abominations of their fathers, and say unto them." And the rest of the chapter seems to be causing them to know these abominations. "Say unto them, Thus saith the Lord Yahweh, In the day when I chose Israel, lifted up mine hand to the seed of the house of Jacob, made myself known unto them in the land of Egypt, when I lifted up mine hand unto them, saying, I am Yahweh your God. The day that I lifted up mine hand unto them to bring them forth out of the land of Egypt into a land that I had espied for them, flowing with milk and honey, which is the glory of all lands, then said I unto them, Cast ye away every man the abominations of his eyes, and defile not yourselves the idols of Egypt. I am Yahweh your God. God, while they were still in the land of Egypt, told them to throw away their idols, and they didn't. Verse 8, But they rebelled against me, would not hearken unto me, they did not every man cast away the abominations of their eyes, neither did they forsake the idols of Egypt. Then I said, I will pour out my fury. Notice those words, these recurring words. I will pour out my fury upon them to accomplish my anger against them in the midst of the land of Egypt. While they were still in Egypt, God wanted to pour out his fury upon them because they wouldn't throw their idols away. But, verse 9, But I wrought for my name's sake that it should not be polluted before the heathen among whom they were, in whose sight I had made myself known unto them in bringing them forth out of the land of Egypt. So, wherefore, I caused them to go forth out of the land of Egypt and brought them into the wilderness. He didn't destroy them while they were still in Egypt, because he didn't throw their idols away, because he didn't want to profane his name. He wanted to glorify it and elevate it in the sight of the nations. So he brought them out of Egypt in order not to profane his name. And then we read about them, their apostasy in the wilderness following this. Verse 11, I gave them my statutes, showed them my judgments, which if a man do, he shall even live in them. Moreover, I gave them my Sabbaths to be a sign between me and them, that they might know that I am Yahweh that sanctify them. But the house of Israel rebelled against me in the wilderness. Now they walk not in my statutes, they despise my judgments, which if a man do, he shall even live in them. And my Sabbaths they greatly profane. Then I said, I would, notice the recurring words again, I would pour out my fury upon them in the wilderness to consume them. So God's feelings in the matter were that he would have liked to have consumed and totally destroyed that nation in the wilderness. But he didn't, verse 14, But I wrought for my name's sake that it should not be polluted before the heathen. And so God's fury was never fully poured out upon the nation. It was always restrained at every stage. Although he did judge Israel at these times, his fury was restrained for his name's sake. It continues to talk about them in the wilderness. God lifts his hand unto them in the wilderness, verse 15, But I would not bring them into the land. He did punish them. That whole generation were not allowed to go into the land which he had given them, but all the same, he didn't consume them. Then we read in verse 18, I said unto their children in the wilderness, children of the generation that perished, Walk ye not in the statutes of your fathers, neither observe their judgments, nor defile yourselves with their idols. I am Yahweh your God, walk in my statutes, keep my judgments, and do them, hallow my Sabbaths, and they shall be a sign between me and you, that ye may know that I am Yahweh your God. Notwithstanding the children rebelled against me, they walked not in my statutes, neither kept my judgments to do them, which if a man do, he shall live in them. They polluted my Sabbaths. Then I said, I would pour out my fury upon them to accomplish my anger against them in the wilderness. Nevertheless, verse 22, I withdrew my hand and wrought for my name's sake that it should not be polluted in the sight of the heathen in whose sight I brought them forth. And so God did not destroy them, and he did bring them into the land, but while they were in the land, they apostatized again. And God did eventually scatter them amongst the nations. Verse 27, Therefore, son of man, speak unto the house of Israel, Thus saith Lord Yahweh, Yet in this your fathers have blasphemed me, and that they have committed a trespass against me. For when I had brought them into the land for which I lifted up mine hand to give it to them, they saw every high hill and all the thick trees, and there they offered there their sacrifices, they presented the provocation of their offering. They also made a sweet savour, and they poured out their drink offerings, and so on. And so it was necessary for God to scatter them. But the climax of this whole chapter, this whole series where it talks about God wishing to pour out his fury, but restraining his hand at each stage, comes in verse 33. And now, this is speaking in the context of the regathering of the 10 tribes of Israel. As I live, saith the Lord Yahweh, surely with a mighty hand and with a stretched out arm, notice, and with fury poured out. Now in the context, this can only be fury against Israel. Some have suggested that this is fury against Gentile nations, but it simply doesn't fit that. The context demands that this is fury against Israel that accompanies God bringing them out of the people. We read verse 33 again. As I live, saith the Lord Yahweh, surely with a mighty hand and with a stretched out arm and with fury poured out will I rule over you, and I will bring you out from the people and will gather you out of the countries wherein ye are scattered with a mighty hand and with a stretched out arm and with fury poured out. Same words again. And I will bring you into what is termed here the wilderness of the people. There will I plead with you face to face, like as I pleaded with your fathers in the wilderness of the land of Egypt, so will I plead with you, saith the Lord Yahweh, and I will cause you to pass under the rod, and I will bring you into the bond of the covenant, and I will purge out from among you the rebels, and them that transgress against me, and I will bring them forth out of the country where they sojourn, and they shall not enter into the land of Israel, and ye shall know that I am Yahweh. So what is God telling us here through the words of the prophet Ezekiel? He is telling us that God's fury was always restrained against Israel in the past, but the time is coming when God will have his final reckoning. He will have his final stand and judgment upon the apostasy of Israel. He's going to gather them together in order to discipline them. He's gathering them with fury poured out because God is still very angry with the 10 tribes, and he is going to bring them into what he terms here the wilderness of the people. And we can only imagine that that term is used here because it is drawing a parallel between the wilderness experience of Israel after they'd come out of Egypt with this great assembly of the 10 tribes of Israel brought out from the nations. God will plead with them. He will bring them. He will put them under discipline, like he put them under the discipline of Moses. Verse 37, I will cause you to pass under the rod, will bring you into the bond of the covenant. So these Israelites of the 10 tribe now, while they're in what is termed the wilderness of the people, not in the land, notice, but in the wilderness of the people, will be brought into covenant relationship with God. They will be brought into the new covenant, unlike their brethren of the house of Judah, who are brought into the new covenant while they're in the land. And I will purge out from among you the rebels and them that transgress against me. And so there is to be a great purging out of Israelites from the 10 tribes, because as in the wilderness, there will be many rebels. Now I suggest that this is probably the answer to the problem associated with the words, I will bring you one of a city and two of a family. Because the proportion of Israelites of the 10 tribes that will actually return to the land will probably be quite small in relation to the numbers that are called out of the Gentile nations, because God is going to judge them first and purge out the rebels. No doubt, as in the wilderness of old, there will be many who initially will leave the land of the Gentiles with in great faith, and will have great anticipation of the return to Zion. But as soon as the difficulties of the way present themselves in the turmoil of these times, their faith, as with Israel of old in the wilderness, will fail them, and many, perhaps an entire generation, I don't know, it depends how long this takes, will perish and not enter the land. It has been suggested that this period when Israel is in the wilderness of the people might take as long as 40 years, on the basis of the fact that it would be very fitting if this period of discipline of the 10 tribes took the same length of time as the period in which God disciplined and purged the nation after they brought them out of Egypt. I know no absolute proof of the suggestion that the return of the 10 tribes of Israel to the land will take 40 years. Some have quoted from Micah chapter 7. There's no need to turn to this now, but there it says, according to the days of thy coming out of the land of Egypt will I show unto him marvellous things. But it would seem quite fitting to me that the 10 tribes are to spend, it would seem quite fitting if this is the case, that the 10 tribes are to spend 40 years in what is termed the wilderness of the people. It certainly will take a period of time, because the rebels have got to be purged out from their midst. And so, perhaps we have not in the past given sufficient emphasis to the fact that Israel, the 10 tribes, are still regarded as a wicked nation, that they will need to pass under the rod of correction in what is termed the wilderness of the people, and that there are distinct parallels with their earlier wilderness experience, when a whole generation of rebels died in the wilderness. And God's intention with these latter-day rebels is stated quite categorically in verse 38. I will bring them forth out of the country where they sojourn, and they shall not enter the land of Israel. Those who do not rebel and who remain faithful will be brought back to Zion. And we can, no doubt, picture the great scenes of rejoicing that will exist when, finally, after this great traumatic experience, the refined 10 tribes are brought back to the land, and the stick of Ephraim is joined to the stick of Judah, and the people become one nation in the land. I'd like to turn to Malachi chapter 4. We've almost finished now, and we've had to leave a lot untouched that we'd like to have done because of the time, because we will be getting very fed up if I went on for very much longer. Malachi chapter 4. It's just a few suggestions about the work of the prophet Elijah. Malachi chapter 4 speaks of the work of the prophet Elijah. Malachi chapter 4 and verse 5. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of Yahweh. He shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children, and the heart of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth the cursed. We're looking at all the scripture evidence as we have. We believe that the means of the tribe of Judah repenting will be that they will be in the land, the Gentiles will come into their land, Gog and his armies. A terrible destruction will be visited upon them. They, by the virtue of this terrible judgment, will be made more amenable to their eventual repentance. Christ and the saints will be manifested to them. There will be a great mourning, and they will repent and be brought into the new covenant. However, the 10 tribes will need an individual, a prophet, to instruct them. Elijah, of course, was not a prophet sent to Judah. He was a prophet sent to the 10 tribes of Israel. And I believe that it is his ministry is not to Judah, but to the 10 tribes of Israel. And it would be the work of Elijah to correct the house of Israel, the house of Ephraim, just as Moses in the past was the person responsible for disciplining Israel in the wilderness. So Elijah, we believe, will be responsible for disciplining Israel in the wilderness of the people. And there is a contrast, there is a similarity here drawn with Moses in verse 4. Remember ye the law of Moses my servant, which I commanded unto him in Horeb for all Israel, with the statutes and judgments. Behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of Yahweh. And so, quite clearly here, the context is comparing the work of Moses with the work of Elijah. And just as Moses disciplined Israel in the past, so Elijah is to discipline Israel in the future. He is to turn the heart of the children to their fathers, and to turn the heart of the fathers to the children. It's easy to understand what is meant by turning the heart of the children to their fathers. Perhaps a little more difficult to understand Elijah turning the heart of the fathers to the children. Turning the heart of the children to their fathers, the fathers being Abraham, Isaac and Jacob, the children, as a result of the work of Elijah, will be given an Abrahamic disposition. They will look once again to the covenants of promise which God made to Abraham, and they will look to the seed of Abraham who shall possess the gate of his enemies, and they will see in him their salvation. In what sense then will Elijah turn the heart of the fathers to the children? Well, it has been suggested to me, and this is a very interesting suggestion, it's not my idea, another brother suggested this to me, that when Abraham, Isaac and Jacob learn of the awful apostasy and wickedness of their descendants, and when, having been raised from the dead, they look from the land of promise which they have now inherited, they look at the wicked Jews living in exile, and at their materialism, their lack of complete lack of understanding, the darkness which exists in their minds, they will be absolutely horrified, that they will in fact virtually wish to disown this natural seed after the flesh. And so Abraham, Isaac and Jacob will be in need of reconciliation to their natural seed, just as Israel has to be reconciled to Christ. And only when they see them beginning to manifest that faithful disposition which they themselves manifested in their life, in their time of probation, only then will they be reconciled to their natural seed. And so in that sense, Elijah will turn the heart of the fathers to the children by effecting a moral regeneration in the hearts of the 10 tribes. We'd like to finish there. There's a lot more that we could say. But we do think that taking all the evidence into account, it seems most likely that the work of Elijah is to the 10 tribes and not to the house of Judah. There is a lot more that we would have liked to have said, but I think the best thing is we stop there and just have a discussion.